Great good afternoon. It's an overcast but warm spring day, Wednesday, April 14th, 2021. It's the Bob Cadaro Show, and I am he. So much to talk about. You know, we're watching the world go upside down. And I was talking about that yesterday, and it's just it just causes such outrage for anyone who is right thinking to see what is happening. But there is an oasis. There's an oasis for all of this, and it's called Alaska. And it is an oasis because they have a governor from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who I knew back in high school. It was Michael Weiss. His nickname was Nature. And he went to Nature and became a state senator from 2013 to 2018 and then became the 12th governor of Alaska. And he's done what had to be done. He's taken whatever steps he believed were, whether they were politically correct or not, he says what he means, he says what he believes, and he is without doubt this Scranton native, one of the most refreshing people in politics in this country. And without further ado, we are joined by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Welcome.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I am great. I'm better now that I got you on the air.
Well, good. Good. You got to come up and visit Alaska someday.
I have to. I really do. And I try not to go anywhere that is colder than where I actually live. But this, I will make an exception. There's no doubt about that.
Let us know.
All right. So, Governor, I'd like to sort of start off with, how did you get there? Again, your nickname was Nature in high school. You were into all that kind of thing and known for it, but how did you get from Scranton Central High School to Alaska?
So, I mean, I always liked the outdoors, as you noted, and there's no other place like Alaska. And after college, back in the early 80s, right after college, I graduated, I went to Seattle, got on a ferry, and went up to Southeast Alaska, had a job at a logging camp in the shop, and just fell in love with the place, and never left. And I'd have to live 8 lifetimes, Bob, to do everything I want to do here in Alaska. I mean, it's an incredible state. It's 2.5 times the size of Texas. It's the northernmost state, the westernmost state, and the easternmost state. It's the easternmost state because part of the Aleutian Islands crosses over the international state line.
Yeah.
It's they used to have 4 time zones. It's got great people, and just the landscape. It's just there's no other state like it. Mm.
And so you go up to Alaska. You start off in logging. You get into education. Start your own little educational company, as I recall, and yep. And then decide to start running for office.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about public service, and when you're an educator, when you're a teacher, principal, superintendent, you're serving the public, you're serving kids and their families, and so in many respects, it was a natural extension of that. But it's a small state population-wise, about 730,000 people, and you can really make a difference in a state like this. I mean, you have a state like California with 30-some million. It's a little tougher, but here in Alaska,
they seem to be ruining it, Governor. They seem to be ruining California just fine.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's a lot of there's certainly question as to how they're governing down there, but nonetheless, Alaska just you can. There's a lot of opportunity up here if we're allowed to do it. What I mean by allowed to do it, there's a lot of federal land here. There's oftentimes federal attempts at federal oversight, and so we have a constant battle at Washington with regard to Alaska.
Now, and I'm going to skip out of order of the questions and the things that I wanted to talk to you about. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Governor Mike Dunleavy of Alaska. He is a Scranton native and has been really doing some big things both in Alaska and nationally. But your latest initiative regarding the federal control is regarding the waterways. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so when Alaska was granted statehood in 59, we were supposed to get from the federal government. Keep in mind that Alaska was a federal territory that was purchased in 1867 from the Russians. And when we became a state, we were guaranteed a certain amount of land and sovereignty over that land. And part of that was our navigable rivers, lakes, and other tidal areas. Well, the federal government hasn't really relinquished control over some of those rivers, actually many of those rivers. And so what would happen is when Alaskans would take a boat or otherwise traverse those rivers, because the rivers are really our highways. We don't have very many highways up here, and so people use the rivers to get back and forth, sometimes their own home or their recreational cabin. But they would get stopped by federal agents in the Park Service mainly, and be told that they, you know, couldn't use their motorized boats, they couldn't use the river. And so a man by the name of John Sturgeon brought his case in the Supreme Court. He was stopped and cited on a river in Alaska by Park Service officials. He fought that, and he won the first case. He won 8-0 in the U.S. Supreme Court that Alaskans had the right to traverse their own rivers and their submerged lands under the rivers. That was challenged to some extent, and so they went back again. There was a section of that law was challenged, so they went back again to the Supreme Court, and he won 9-0. Now, keep in mind, this is with liberal and conservative judges, and so the courts were adamant that Alaska had the right and jurisdiction, the sovereignty over their rivers. And so basically what we told the federal government and their agents is, you no longer have control. Don't pretend you have control. If you stop or cite our Alaskans on our rivers, we'll intervene, and we're going to push back, and this has got to end. This is 62 years of them doing this. And so we put an end to it a couple weeks ago, and we're ready to challenge them if they try to do it again. We'll challenge them in court.
Good for you, because you're right. You found that federal control is onerous and does not react to the people of Alaska themselves.
No, you're right. I mean, for example, Bob, we have a huge cruise ship tourism industry up here. Billions of dollars worth of revenue is generated in wealth from that cruise ship industry. Well, the CDC has shut it down, has said that there's a no-sail order. We have about 3 days left in this season to be able to prepare for the season for these cruise ships. And if the CDC does not back down, we're prepared to file a lawsuit. We'll probably join the case with Florida. DeSantis is doing the same, because we've managed this virus up here better than probably any state in the country. Some of the highest vaccination rates, lowest death rates, lowest hospitalization rates. And so we know what we're doing with regard to this virus. And we know that in working with the cruise ship industry, we can make this work. But again, the federal government, they say they're using science, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to us. And so we'll know here in the next 2 days whether we have to file a suit and join the lawsuit with Texas to fight the federal government on this issue.
And you've watched, and you're right. I often cite Governor DeSantis, but Alaska, I cite you as well. You've done better than anybody, literally, in combating the virus. And I know it's a state that is sparsely populated, but there's bigger cities and bigger towns where this still hasn't struck.
Yeah, we have communities in Alaska that are so isolated that they've never seen the virus. And our issue was, back in 1918, when the Spanish flu hit, descended on this world, Alaska got hit harder than any other place on the planet, with the exception of Samoa. And our native population, our Eskimo folks, Indian and Aleut folks, constitute about 15% of our population. So we have the largest concentration of Native Americans in the country. We wanted to make sure that they didn't suffer the same fate they did in 1918. So we got on it real fast, worked with all the tribes, worked with all the municipalities and the health consortiums. And the data speaks for itself. Set the lowest death numbers next to Vermont, lowest hospitalization rates. Some of the best, if not best, vaccination rates. And so we're putting this virus behind us. We're opened up, and we want people to come to Alaska this summer.
And you did it without the draconian lockdowns. You did what you had to do, but you did it without the draconian long periods of lockdowns, re-lockdowns, and all of the other things that really impinged on people's freedoms.
Yeah, the state has been open since early May. Once we realized what this virus was and wasn't, we lifted the restrictions, and we never locked down. We never told people they couldn't leave their house or they couldn't go out and recreate and do things. There were some restrictions on gatherings, and so we did away with those restrictions back in May.
That is so refreshing. And, wow.
So, you know, some of our largest city, Anchorage, still has some restrictions, and there's a lot of questions as to whether that's necessary, and we have the discussions with the municipality on this. But nonetheless, the state is open. We're open for business. We're open for tourists. And we're looking to put this virus behind us.
Now, in 2019, Alaska was suffering economically from the energy industry, which I want to get to in a little bit. You had proposed about $400 million plus in cuts to the state budget, $130 million to the University of Alaska, and the entrenched interests got really angry, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And there's always a lot of special interests that have tied themselves into the government teat, as we say. And when we made an attempt to reduce the budget, because we did have a budget, a revenue shortfall because of the drop in oil prices, a lot of these special interests, they fought back. And so they sent their legion of lobbyists. And as you know, they started a recall effort to try and recall me for the reductions in the budget.
That's when I knew you were doing the right thing.
Well, you know, it's you know, you can't please all the people all the time, and in a state government, when you're the governor, you've got to make some tough decisions every day, and this was one of them. We wanted to get our budget in line with our revenues, and so again, there were a number of special interests that didn't care for that, and we're still fighting them.
Bob Cordaro on the Bob Cordaro Show, talking with Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy, a Scranton native. Tell me, you're unapologetically Republican and conservative, correct?
Yes.
Now, and I've observed that about you. You say what you say. Tell me, well, I want to take one step back. Oil and energy are the lifeblood of Alaska's economy and the Alaskans. It's one of your greatest resources and what you present to the world. And yet, nature is the second most important commodity you have, maybe even the most important, just the enjoyment of it and all that. You are making them coexist. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be an either or. I mean, for example, you know, we're trying to get some oil drilling, exploration and drilling in a wildlife refuge called ANWR. ANWR is enormous. It's probably bigger than most states. And the leases that were sold up there but put on hold by the Biden administration, that would constitute about the size of a postage stamp on a football field in comparison to the rest of the wildlife refuge. And the wildlife refuge, when it was established, they also had a clause in there that we would be able to explore for oil and gas. And so you can do both. We have tremendous renewable resources up here in Alaska, hydro, wind, tidal, geothermal, you name it. We've got probably just about every energy source there is in this state. And you can do both. You can both be a renewable individual as well as oil and gas, because oil and gas is not going to go away. This economy that is based on oil and gas is not going to change overnight. And so we do it, and we do it better in Alaska than anywhere else in the world. And that's my argument with folks, Bob, is if you shut it down in Alaska and you push it over to Africa, other places in Asia, they're not going to have the environmental protections that Alaska does. And so if you think you're going to save the environment, you're not going to save it, because they will do it worse in other places. And we lose the jobs, we lose the revenue, we lose the opportunity. So it makes perfect sense to do it in America, do it in Alaska, and we'll do it right.
Now, I'll tell you, I'd like you to run for U.S. Senate. You're not in it for this particular race, but I have some issues with one of your senators. Tell me the future of Anwar.
So the leases were sold. There was a bill passed under President Trump. And by the way, President Trump was probably the best president in Alaska's history in terms of opportunity that he worked with us on. But nonetheless, in the tax bill back in, I believe it was 1718, Anwar was put in there that we were going to sell leases. The federal government was going to sell leases.
And that was to get Lisa Murkowski's vote, but now it's being thwarted.
Well, yes. And now the Biden administration has issued an order, an executive order, to put those sales on hold. We're going to obviously do our best to fight that. We've joined in lawsuits with Louisiana because offshore oil leases have been put on hold as well. We've joined with Wyoming and Montana for the same reasons, for resource development, especially oil and gas. And so, unfortunately, you have to lawyer up in these instances, or your state suffers tremendously. But again, we're gonna remain optimistic that we can get these leases executed and start to get some exploration up there.
Well, we'll keep checking with you on that. Now, tell me about the current state of politics. There seems like there's almost a normalcy in Alaska that we don't have in a lot of other places.
Yeah. So, that's a good point. So, Alaska has never experienced the riots, the lootings, the shootings, the burnings that have happened down, as we call in the lower 48, and still is happening right now. And I think it's a testament to the people up here. We get along, I think, fairly well, different groups of folks. It's a very diverse state. City of Anchorage is probably the most diverse city in the entire country. A lot of folks from Asia, a lot of folks from the Pacific Islands, Europe, Africa, as I mentioned, a lot of Native Americans, Native Alaskans. And so we've so far figured out how to get along and work together. And so, again, we didn't have to experience any of the issues that are occurring down south. We hope we never do. But it's really a great place. It's really a great place not just to visit, but for me, it's a great place to live.
Tell me about your thoughts, observing from up above, the state of politics in the United States, the lower 48.
Yeah. Yeah, it's becoming more divisive. My parents were Democrats, FDR Democrats, and they're great people. My mother and father were just terrific folks. And so they raised their four boys to think on their own. But back then, the parties, in many respects, were closer together. You never asked your friend when you went to play football or baseball when you were a kid, hey, are your parents Republicans or Democrats? Everybody rooted for the same football teams, basketball teams for the most part, baseball teams. But what was really important is it didn't matter if you were Republican or Democrat. You wanted your kids to succeed. You wanted them to do well. You saluted the flag. You had respect for those that were in the military. And you had respect for law and order. But as we see, there's a lot of attempts at dividing this country now along racial lines, ethnic lines. The whole masking thing, to some extent, during this virus was politicized. And so it's not good for this country. And I'm a little concerned as to where it's going. But I think if we all work hard at it, we could pull ourselves back together. But dividing the country, splitting the country, it is going to be, I think, detrimental in many respects.
Now, I noted
it's going to.
I noted that you did the Brian Kilmeade show, so you did. You're doing national shows. Is there a future or a thought of a future on the national stage for you?
Yeah, you never say never, and I know politicians say that, but I have to tell you, I'm looking out right now at mountains. I live on 45 acres, literally on the frontier. There's nothing behind us but 350 miles.
incredible.
I'm looking at a moose right now in the back area of the house. So that's going to be tough to trade that for Washington, D.C. I've been to Washington, D.C. I've been there many times to work with President Trump. And I couldn't wait to get on the plane to come back home.
I can only imagine. That is great stuff. We're talking with Governor Mike Dunleavy of Alaska, Scranton native. And Governor, anytime you want to communicate with your old homies here, you call me and we'll get you on the air. I truly appreciate you taking the time early this morning and talking with us and letting us know and letting the people know we have a great governor. He just happens to be in Alaska.
I appreciate that, Bob. And let me give a quick shout out to my brother Patrick and his wife Mary and their great family. And you know, all my friends and relatives in Scranton. Scranton is just an absolutely fantastic place, and I wouldn't have wanted to grow up anywhere else. So I appreciate it.
Fantastic, and we are all so proud of you as well. And hopefully I'll be seeing all those relatives and friends of yours, and I will pass on that Governor Mike Dunleavy, nature is doing well.
Awesome, come visit. Come visit Alaska.
No doubt about it. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Bye-bye. Governor Mike Dunleavy of Alaska, we want to thank him for coming on. We've got to take a break. Bob Cadaro on the Bob Cadaro Show. We'll be back after this.